I'm Callie Crossley. This is Boston Public Radio. We all know what it's like to be sick. Well, think about being 80 or 90 years old. You have to get a ride or take a bus to get to the doctor and wait however long before anyone can see you. Now, instead, imagine having a doctor who comes to your home to take care of you. It sounds like something from another century, but house calls are making a comeback thanks to a new pilot program. Joining me on the phone from Washington, D.C. is someone who's been very instrumental in supporting this pilot program, Congressman Ed Markey. Congressman Markey, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me on.
Also here with me is Dr. Daniel Oates. He's a geriatrician at Boston Medical Center, where they have been doing this kind of work since 1875. They are also part of this pilot program. Dr. Oates, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
So, Congressman Markey, in the materials expressing your enthusiasm about this pilot program, you say it's the house calls of yesteryear into the 21st century, going from the black bag to the BlackBerry. Tell us what you mean.
Well, what I mean is that independence at home will steer our healthcare system towards a focus on quality and not simply on the quantity of care. Seriously ill Americans are lost in transition, struggling to manage multiple illnesses as they transition between emergency room, hospital, nursing facility, and home. But the independence at home legislation and now pilot project helps them find is the dignity and the peace of mind that comes with living independently. And what we do is we create incentives for hospitals, for doctors, for nurse practitioners, for nursing homes to figure out strategies to keep the sick person at home. And the profit making is done by reducing the cost of hospitalization or putting people in nursing homes, and it works for all parts of the system, but especially the families who would love to keep their sick loved one at home as long as possible.
Well, I think everybody could see at the outset that it's wonderful from a social aspect, but what we're talking about here are bottom line savings. Talk about how and why this kind of home care actually isn't more expensive and leads to cost savings.
Well, the way the system works right now is that the most expensive part of the system is when someone has to be in a hospital room. It's when someone has to be in a nursing home room. The least expensive is when someone's at home. So although it seems like it's going in a way back machine, people had it right for the first 5,000 years. That was families trying their best to keep people, seniors especially, at home, especially those with several chronic conditions. And they can't get in to see a doctor regularly, often receive fragmented and poor quality care. They have multiple doctors and specialists. They get confusing orders from their doctor and conflicting drug prescriptions. Well, independence at home fixes that by encouraging doctors to coordinate care for these seniors so that the patients can better manage their conditions, avoid unnecessary hospitalization, and that saves the entire system money while keeping that person at home.
Now, here is a figure that caught my eye. It couldn't help but 4 million seniors nationwide have advanced chronic illnesses, diabetes, Alzheimer's, heart disease, and they're too ill or disabled, so they're homebound. But they represent those 4 million, 10% of Medicare, but account for 2/3 of Medicare's expenditures. And the top 5% account for nearly 50% of Medicare's expenditure. I mean, that's huge.
Well, if you just think about Medicare and Medicaid, stop right there. $140 billion was spent in 2011 on Alzheimer's patients in America. $140 billion. In 2011, we spent $600 billion for the entire defense of our country. Planes, aircraft carriers, you name it. Over in Afghanistan, everywhere, $600 billion. A quarter of that is the total budget right now just to keep people taken care of with Medicare and Medicaid with Alzheimer's, and that's with 5 million Americans with Alzheimer's. By the time all the baby boomers have retired, 15 million baby boomers are going to have Alzheimer's. So we just have to be realistic that unless we, one, fund NIH to find a cure, we need a new system that'll keep the cost down, or else we're going to bankrupt the country. And so that's what this Independence at Home program begins to help in creating a new way of looking at the issue.
Now, this is a part of the Affordable Health Care Act. Is this, and we've said this is a pilot program, eventually is this something that will be a part of everybody's system everywhere?
Well, they are starting off with 10 million Medicare patients suffering from multiple chronic diseases that will be part of this project. And the Boston Medical Center and Dr. Oates is one of the 15 sites in the country that have been selected to be part of the pilot project. So Dr. Oates is one of the nation's leading geriatricians, and he is going to provide expert analysis of what is the best way, ultimately, to implement Independence at Home.
And how proud are you that the Dr. Oates program at Boston Medical Center is one of 16 in the country and the only one in New England?
That's correct. And it's a good reason, because it's such a superior program.
Congressman Markey, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me on.
That was Congressman Ed Markey on the phone with us from Washington, D.C. He was instrumental in supporting a pilot program, of which our my other guest, Dr. Daniel Oates, a geriatrician at Boston Medical Center, will be heading up. So, Dr. Oates, let's go back over some of the ground that Congressman Markey shared with us in brief way. And that is really just get our heads around the cost savings and how this works. I'm interested in, because you go out on these house calls, mm-hmm. what happens when you go out on these house calls? And in that interaction with the patients, how does it end up, in fact, being less expensive by going to the home?
So I go out, usually I see six patients a day. I bring with me trainees from the BU School of Medicine and whatnot. And in doing this, I go out and see the patient in their own home environment where they feel comfortable, they're in charge, and that they've invited me into their own home. So the power differential is a little bit different in that the patient is in charge in that environment rather than being in the physician's office. So in doing this, I have more time to talk to the patient about the things that are important to them, use my own eyes to make observations and see things that might be going on in the home that I would not necessarily be able to see in an office-based visit.
Or they might tell you in an office visit.
Right. Mm-hmm. And I can see things that perhaps that there are rugs that are, scatter rugs that are around that prevent a fall hazard. You could see if the medications don't appear as organized as one might think, or patients may demonstrate to me that they're not taking medications appropriately, something that, you know, 1 or 2 months from that visit would have led to a hospitalization for heart failure. But in going out to the home and seeing what's going on, I'm able to sort of make corrective action and sort of prevent that from occurring down the line, saving $10,000, $15,000, $20,000 hospitalization.
Can you give me a good example of some home visits you've made where the observation and being there made a huge difference?
So there's a classic example of a patient that I've taken care of now for about 6 years. She's going to turn 101 years old next month.
Wow.
Yep. So I see her in her kitchen with her daughter, who's her primary caregiver. And her daughter is just an amazing, amazing person who refers to herself as Dr. Marie. I'm Dr. Marie. So we had issues with swelling in her legs and some heart failure and whatnot, and we tried a lot of medication adjustments and Lasix and whatnot. And the problem got a little bit better, but didn't resolve itself as we thought it would with our interventions. And the daughter swore up and down that, I don't give my mother salt. I know salt is bad. She gets no salt. So one day, the medical students were talking with the patient, and we were sitting at her small kitchen table. And next to the patient, I noticed a box of baking soda. So baking soda is sodium bicarbonate. So So I asked the daughter, I said, what is the baking soda for? Oh, my mother loves this on her vegetables.
Oh my God.
So the mother was putting baking soda on her vegetables instead of salt, but she was still getting salt and the sodium in the same way. So this was the etiology of why the problem wasn't getting better. And I would not have seen that had I seen her in the office with her daughter, but I saw that in the home.
And if she'd been in the office visit, if you said, what are you doing at home? I'm sure that's just so part of her day, it would never have come up.
She'd been doing that since she was 25 years old.
Oh my God.
So that certainly would not have come up.
All right. So let's talk more specifically about what this pilot program is going to be doing. We should note that the program at Boston Medical Center, you've been doing this kind of work since 1875.
Long before I was
born. So the work is not new to you, but it part of this Independence at Home national pilot program, which started in June and goes for 3 years, mm-hmm. is new to some degree in how you're formatting it. Exactly how will it work, and are there any differences in the way you've been operating before you became a part of this pilot program?
So there are certain, not all patients in our program are eligible for the Independence at Home program because there are certain guidelines set forth by Medicare as to what are the qualifications for a patient to enroll in this program. It has to do with age, you have to have Medicare, you have to have had a hospitalization within the past 12 years. You have to have at least two deficits in your activities of daily living, which include being able to transfer out of a chair on your own, being able to bathe on your own, being able to dress on your own, things like that. And you have to have received a rehabilitative service within the past calendar year. So that's skilled nursing at home, physical therapy, occupational therapy. So you have to meet those certain criteria in order to enroll in this program. And as Congressman Markey pointed out, that some of those qualifying guidelines indicate the top 10%, those are the patients who use the highest cost. And that's where Medicare wants to focus a lot of the efforts to try to reduce the cost over the long run. So not only are there those qualifying guidelines, but then there are also certain quality measures that you have to sort of strive for these patients. They include, contact within 48 hours after an emergency department visit, contact either in person or on the telephone if a patient's admitted to a hospital, either your institution or another institution, a follow-up within 48 hours of emergency room visit.
So it's real close follow-up.
Close follow-up, yeah, mm-hmm. that we do anyways, but sometimes it's done over the phone. We use our clinical judgment mm-hmm. to decide, the patient, okay, there were no medication changes made. They say they're doing well. Maybe they can get a visit in a week rather than in the 48-hour window that's required within this program.
My guest is Dr. Daniel Oates. He's a geriatrician at Boston Medical Center, where they've been doing house calls since 1875. But now Boston Medical Center is a part of a pilot program, which includes 15 other cities, centers around the country. And it is a part of the Affordable Care Act. And the driving part of this is to not only organize medicine, as Congressman Markey said, but also to save costs. So in the example that you gave us of visiting this woman in her home and discovering the sodium, what if she'd gone to the hospital because it gotten so bad and she had to be hospitalized? What was the cost of your or your team going to see her versus what would have happened in the hospital?
Right. So the cost is always different from what you actually get paid for what you do. So the cost would probably have been somewhere around maybe $300 or $350 cost, including because we work as a collaborative practice. So I work as a team with me, experienced nurse case manager, secretarial front desk secretarial staff, who all work together to provide care to the patients. So even though there was one visit, there's all phone calls and with the daughter and follow-up with labs that would go into it. So it would probably be somewhere between $350 and, say, $500 actual cost for that visit, of which Medicare, off the top of my head, probably reimbursed us around $150 for that visit.
If and the hospital was picking up the rest thus far.
Right. Right. BMC, okay. It's part of our mission to our community. So mm-hmm. Had she been hospitalized for heart failure or, something like that, it probably would have been on the order of $10,000 to $20,000 in that range, give or take a few on either end. So it saved a substantial amount of money that I was able to go out and pick this up with the help of her daughter and not only prevent the cost savings, but I know that this patient does not want to be in the hospital. She wants to be in her home for 55 years with her very large extended family that she loves very much. And so aside from the money, we were able to help her continue to do that, and she is still there to this day because I spoke to her daughter last Friday.
Well, and on top of that, it saves a bed for somebody who really needs to go to the hospital. I mean, there's all of that to consider as well. I've read study after study about seniors and those people who live alone or are close to living alone, maybe with people coming in to check on them, about how that interaction with other folks helps them health-wise. Mm-hmm. It's not just a social phenomenon, but it actually translates into their being healthier as a result of it. So you get a little boon from that, too, by a home visit from a doctor, which most of your visit is about the kind of conversation and diagnosis and observation for which doctors in our current system are often not paid.
Correct.
So explain that to people who don't know, that all of that good stuff that makes the difference, that is the core of the prevention, possibly, and observation about what needs to be happening in the future for that patient, health-wise, that's not paid, but a pill is.
Right, and it's a problem. So one of the, I think that, as you pointed out, that just the human interaction can sometimes be a huge boon and a huge help to patients, especially patients who live in isolation. I always bring medical students with me, and almost all of my patients love having the students with me. They love interacting. They love the ability to teach them. That the students are very, you know, professional, and they interact with the patients, and patients get to teach them something about this is what you need to do when you're a doctor. This is how you talk to patients. So every patient feels they put their fingerprint on the future doctors of America. And I think for a lot of patients, that's an awful lot of fun. And when I have days without students, they all turn to me and say, Dr. Oates, where are your helpers today?
Yeah.
So I think that plays a big role too in healthcare and in good health for our patients.
Now, as we've mentioned, you're one of 16 organizations, centers that are participating in this pilot program. Are the other 15 very different from what you're doing? And they operate differently?
They're all very different in terms of geography of where they're located. Some are down south, some are on the west coast, some are in the Midwest, some are on the east coast. And depending upon the geography, are they more rural areas or more urban areas? They're all set up very differently in terms of their model of care, in terms of the number of patients that they have in their practice. But the common theme is the home visits and the commitment to providing a very high quality care to these very vulnerable elders.
So at the end of 3 years, what do you expect? I mean, I think everybody thinks this is a good idea, so we just need proof of it, right?
The proof is in the pudding. And it can be studies like this can be very challenging because you take patients and you enroll them in a program and you provide them with care that's not necessarily standard of care, that this is supposed to be enhanced care, better than what people would get in the current model in the United States. And you can calculate what their cost actually is. But then in order to show savings, you have to compare it to what might their cost have been had they not been in their program. That piece is a little bit more challenging to figure out. Research is improved and is much better now than it was, say, 10 years ago, trying to predict patient utilization and cost, but it's a very, very challenging area. So trying to predict what the actual cost would be for these patients compared to what the actual cost is, I think it's going to be very challenging.
And then also, I think, trying to define who are the sickest, because this is supposed to concentrate on, quote, the sickest patients. So you've outlined some of the criteria, but that's kind of a squishy. How do you make that?
Well, I think one of the other challenges is that, I think most primary care physicians are very caring, very dedicated to their patients, and work very hard to keep their patients out of the hospital. So if you have a very sick patient, like I have many with multiple chronic medical conditions, but you're able to keep them out of the hospital, then they don't qualify for this program because they haven't been hospitalized within 12 months. So there's a large proportion of patients who are, have the large number of chronic conditions. They, are homebound. They live at home. They have a lot of ADL deficits, these activities of daily living. But they don't qualify because people have been successful through whatever means of keeping them out of the hospital.
That seems a little ironic.
I mean, they got to draw the line somewhere.
Okay.
In terms of including patients.
And now, as I understand it, you're looking for 575 patients in the end. Is that right? Or is it 100? I'm confused about how many.
We have 575 patients in our practice about we're looking to enroll 200 in the Independence at Home program within our own practice.
And that's in addition to the 575 you have now. But I know you don't add that, but I mean, you're just expanding the program.
Right, correct.
To some degree. Now, I'm taken with this. So this fall, this is part of the Affordable Care Act, hospitals will become penalized for high rates of patients returning to the hospital within 30 days of discharge. This somehow works with this program, what this program's trying to prove. Mm-hmm. So the hospitals have to work to keep them out with preventative and at-home intervention.
Correct.
Can you talk about that, explain, and how the pilot program is working with that or not?
One of the big cost drivers in Medicare, readmissions to the hospital for what is felt to be preventable rehospitalizations around certain conditions, one being heart failure, another being chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, things that are chronic medical conditions that can be very challenging to manage. And so people come bouncing back to the hospital costs a lot of money to Medicare. So the idea with a program like Independence at Home is that oftentimes the biggest problems or challenges are around the transitions of care. So the transition from the acute inpatient setting in the hospital, as Congress Markey said, patient in the hospital bed, to the patient being back at home in their own bed in the home. Many times there are lots of medication changes. Patients may have very new serious diagnoses such as, atrial fibrillation or other problems and are on a lot of new medications that can be very challenging to organize. So sometimes if the medication changes aren't implemented correctly, not through any intention of anybody, but it's very complex, going out and seeing the patient within 48 hours in this program, you can identify that, this is not going the way it was expected. This is not going the way that the discharging team had envisioned. And the team can get on top of that right away, saying, okay, they need this, and that they didn't have the meds, and they lost the scripts, or it was raining, and they got rained on. Strange things happen that you could never have imagined. And going out within 2 days of their discharge allows somebody else to intervene, and who knows the patient and knows the family, and can say, this isn't okay, we have to get on top of this, and we got to make some changes.
So this part of the Affordable Care Act is a fundamental shift then in what's been happening.
I would think so, yeah. You know, the way that they're actually rewarding providers for going the extra mile and actually driving out to the patient's home and doing all of these things and providing care coordination, which we know is extremely important to the care of a vulnerable elder.
And of course, the care is the number one thing, but we want to just, because we are in the time period where everybody's talking about healthcare costs, we need to circle back to say that we are talking about the sickest patients and the 4 million seniors estimated nationwide. I don't know how that translates to how many are in our particular area, but the bottom line is that they are taking up, almost by the time you add it all up, half of the Medicaid expenditures. That is huge.
Correct, it is. A major expense.
So if you could, any headway putting home care prevention in place has got to be a benefit.
Right. It's a financial benefit, and I think it's also a benefit to patients who really want to spend their days at home and not in the hospital. So it can be a win-win situation for everybody involved.
And you know, just to follow up your point about going with the students and they're learning how to interact with patients, I have to say, by having to go into someone's home, you really do have to adjust your whole, you know, I am not on a pedestal doctor.
Absolutely.
attitude.
Absolutely.
You know, you
right,
gotta,
absolutely.
That's where you have to come from.
Right. And also, the students learn that the patients are much more than a list of diagnoses. Patients are people who have a whole life story. They can sometimes be more amazing than anything you've ever heard in your whole entire life. And that has occurred to me multiple times.
So you're a geriatrician, Dr. Daniel Oates. The people that are going out with you are primary care physicians. We have heard horrible tales of the shortage of primary care physicians. Now, that is where I think this pilot program could have a problem, because you got to bring in the primary care
Correct.
Physicians as they're the core of this. Talk to me about that. How does that, you know, work?
I mean, I think that students, so there's a huge shortage of primary care physicians. There's a huge shortage of geriatricians in the United States compared to the number of patients who really would benefit from our care. And there has to be a change in how primary care physicians are viewed. Specialists and subspecialists are oftentimes very highly valued and revered and whatnot. So students want to be just like them, who are their mentors. And rightly so, they've done wonderful research and they can do an awful lot. But I think students who have the opportunity to expose themselves to physicians and nurses that I work with see the value and the enjoyment that all of us get from the interpersonal interactions that we have with our patients and their family members every day. I've gone to numerous, numerous wakes and funerals of patients, and their families are very appreciative of everything we've done for them, how much of an impact the team had on the care of their loved one, that this is what they wanted out of the end of their life, that you were able to help us do it. We could not have done it without you. And so I have to take that as part of my reward. Because in this country, geriatricians and primary care doctors just are at the lower end of the pay scale in terms of.
Well, wouldn't something like this change that paradigm?
Well, it's going to take a lot of work. It's going to take a lot of work, because this will save Medicare. Hopefully, will save money to the healthcare system overall, and then there can be discussions about who shares in the cost savings and how is that distributed.
So, finally, Dr. Daniel Oates, how proud are you to be one of 16 in the whole nation?
We have a wonderful, wonderful program. You know, it's a collaborative, team-based approach where everybody loves what they do every day. And to be recognized for what we do in this way is really very special to all of us, because it validates the importance of what we do every day and the hard work that myself and all of my colleagues do on a regular basis.
Well, for my part, I'm happy to see house calls come back, and, you know, in any kind of form. Thank you so much for talking to us.
Thank you so much for having me.
And congratulations.
Thank you.
We've been talking about geriatric care and how house calls can improve the quality of care while cutting costs. I've been speaking with Dr. Daniel Oates, a geriatrician at Boston Medical Center and part of a new pilot program called Independence at Home. I'm Callie Crossley, thank you for listening to another edition of Boston Public Radio. Please join us tomorrow from noon to 2. Our show is a production of WGBH 89.7.